When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If the World Series this year does not outdraw the NBA Finals, it is kind of a clear sign that the NBA Finals now are on a different level ratings-wise.
It is World Series time. It is Hot Sheet at a brand new time. Scotty Braun along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. And hello to some of you that are coming over from Dodgers territory, which runs on Mondays on their channel. So the new schedule that I'm a part of is Foul Territory runs 1 to 3 Eastern if you're a live YouTube viewer. And then 3 o'clock's Dodgers territory. 3:30 is the new day and time on Mondays for BA Hot Sheet. So welcome to everyone. We're excited to have you here and going forward every week, 3:30 Eastern time to catch us live. If you have questions, many of you that catch this show later on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts, if you'd like to chat with us live and ask us a question about your favorite prospect or whatever else, then we're here for you. You know where to find us and when to find us. Let's hit first move. World Series time. So here we go. We've got the heavyweights. Now we're going to put a prospect spin on this. So we've got the Yankees and the Dodgers, JJ, and I don't want people to just say, well, you can buy championships, because you do still need to develop. That is what I will say Steve Cohen looked at when he said, the owner of the Mets, that he wanted to be the Dodgers of the East. The Dodgers don't just acquire the top talent with the purse that they have. They also develop them. But we also have Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. So what do you think about this matchup?
It is the battle of the heavyweights. We have several of the most prominent and best players in the game all facing off in a West Coast, East Coast showdown as well. I mean, I don't think that you have to be a Fox executive to be excited about this. I think there's other reasons to get excited about this. I'm really looking forward to seeing Shohei Ohtani and Juan Soto and Aaron Judge and Mookie Betts, and we can just keep going down the list. But the other thing, like you said, that does stand out here is yes, these are teams who can spin their way out of problems that other teams can't. But like when you look at the Dodgers, and I do see also development success stories there, homegrown players like Austin Wells. When Austin Wells was coming out of college, you know, going into the draft, there was a real question about whether he was going to be able to stay behind the plate. Was he going to be a bat, but maybe not enough glove, not enough defense to stay at catcher? And then if that's the case, it's going to hit enough to be a first baseman. And now you look at it, and this is, to me, a development success story. Austin Wells is a really good catcher defensively now. It kind of shows, for one, just kind of how important it is in pro development. Kind of catching is, I think, it's almost like pitchers in some ways. Catchers and pitchers are the two places where you can see probably the biggest rise of, you know, of a guy comes in kind of as the ingredients, and then player development, you know, working kind of the offseason all can help a guy find a new level. And Jeff, when I kind of look at an Austin Wells, but also I look at a lot of guys that Dodgers bullpen, it is a reminder that players develop through the minors, but they also develop at the major league level as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big narratives around the Dodgers that maybe doesn't necessarily get discussed enough. And that's, you know, there's a laundry list of players that have been in this bullpen in recent years or in the bullpen right now that are players that were cast offs, guys that maybe had, you know, shown moments or whatever, but had never really put it all together. And the Dodgers do a really good job of just optimizing the players that come into their system, whether it be prospects, you know, draft picks, you know, there's guys that are in the mix here that are international signings. They do great on the international market as well. And I think it's just a well-oiled machine all around, just in terms of trying to optimize players, you know, that come into the organization, however they do acquire those guys. And, you know, the Yankees aren't on the same level, but I do think that there is, you know, a heavy focus on scouting. They invest in analytics. They invest in player development. They certainly invest a lot of resources and have for a long time, and notorious for this, for, you know, going into the international market and really getting, you know, a lot of players, not necessarily always the best, though they do get some guys that are top dollar as well. But they don't spare any expense. And I think, you know, beyond the payroll discussion, I do think that that's the other angle here, is just, you know, how they spread money and spread that wealth and that income across the organization. And it's why that, you know, they're consistently winning organizations, and particularly the Dodgers have kind of become the model in a lot of ways for, you know, how a professional sports franchise that competes year after year really should operate. Because there aren't too many sort of stones that are unturned, I'd say, in terms of what the Dodgers do. And I think it's a testament to their depth. I mean, the amount of pitching injuries, and we could talk about, you know, whether their methods are responsible or whatever. I think that's another discussion that people could bring into this. But certainly they have the depth that they have, just in terms of relief pitching, starters, that they can deal with a great deal of injury and still overcome that. And a lot of that comes from the system, and whether that's players that were ready to step in, or, you know, the amount of trades they were able to make from talented prospects in their system that other organizations coveted and wanted. I think that's a big part of the discussion for this Dodgers franchise, but probably the Yankees as well.
The other thing I would say with that, though, is the Dodgers are, in some ways, when we talk about from development side, they're almost kind of, and I'm not feeling sorry for them, you shouldn't feel sorry for them in this, this is the, these are rich people problems, but they're a victim of their own success in some ways, which is, it's really hard to break into this lineup. This is a team where if you're a prospect coming up, the challenge is not just, am I good enough to play in the major leagues? The challenge is, am I good enough to play in the major leagues? And am I a better option than someone who's already there on the Dodgers lineup? Or take your pick of kind of a wide array of players who are available in free agency. Because to take, for example, if you're an outfielder, like Andy Páez eventually did kind of get his opportunity, but it kind of required injuries to do it. Maybe that wouldn't have been the case if not for the fact that the Dodgers could sign Teoscar Hernandez as their fourth major acquisition of the offseason. Many teams can't do that with their Teoscar Hernandez 1 year, 23 mil would be like their major move. For the Dodgers, it's like, we're going to sign Ohtani and Yamamoto. We're going to trade for Glasnow, extend him, and we're going to basically add Hernandez as well. So that blocks a spot. We've seen this where, really, as far as homegrown players, it's been really hard, especially on the position player side, for Dodgers position players to break in. What you're more likely to do is get traded. We've seen this with the catchers. We've seen this with Keibert Ruiz. We saw this with Thyron Lorenzo. We saw this with Michael Bush. There's a number of really solid Dodgers prospects who end up kind of getting blocked and then get moved to kind of help the club elsewhere. And the other thing, again, rich people problems, the Dodgers have rich people opportunities as well. I think, Jeff, that one of the trades that you kind of love of the offseason is the trade, you know, like when they acquire, they can kind of look for the future and the present. Like when they trade guys, they can acquire a Zahir Hope. They can acquire a Jackson Ferris, players who, okay, we're not needing a payoff from that now. We're needing a payoff that long-term. The player who turned around the Tigers season, the trade was when they acquired Trey Sweeney from the Dodgers, who's kind of, again, another guy who was blocked with the Dodgers.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll add to this, JJ. You mentioned the position player versus the pitcher. The Dodgers obviously went through quite a few pitching injuries this year. So if you're a good arm and you deserve to be in the bigs, your chance is still quite high with the Dodgers. Yeah, the separation for me is when you talk to a position player off the record, who's a good prospect, not like a, you know, one of one, top 20, top 30, 40, 50 guy on Baseball America's list, but a guy who should crack the big leagues. And you ask him, hey, which organization would you want to be on? Would you want to be on a club like the Yankees or the Dodgers in their farm system? But maybe it'll take you longer to get there. Maybe you don't crack that roster, so it took you some more time and they traded you? Or would you rather be on a team like, obviously, the Angels are the easy answer. They call up guys earlier than maybe we've ever seen before. I think my argument would be, JJ, that the answer is probably in between. Like, maybe the answer is more along the lines of Cleveland. They're not going to go crazy in free agency. It's a good club. It's a good development club. You're going to get probably a lot of information and maybe improve yourself a lot, depending on the org, right? There's some orgs that do this better than others. But curious what your take is, right? Like, if you caught a prospect, and I've asked this on shows like ours, but most of the time they're not going to give you a total straightforward answer. They're gonna tell you, I want to be where I am, right? But if you do talk, and I've done this to a player who's, say, in the Dodgers system and he's good, not great, he's probably like, yeah, I got kind of screwed here because the Dodgers are too good. It's going to, at the very least, delay my service time, and I'm going to be a rookie at 24 as a position player, like a Michael Bush, right? Is that a good example versus someone who maybe could have cracked the bigs at 22 and made a lot more money and had more success sooner?
I'll take Michael Bush as an example. The Dodgers, because he was a Dodger, Michael Bush, the goal was kind of to try to make him into something that was going to be tougher for him. Can he be a third baseman? Can he be a second baseman? Can he have defensive value and not just be a first baseman? And a lot of that was because there really wasn't an opening at first base in LA. He gets traded and the Cubs are able to just say, you're a first baseman, here you go. And that kind of set him to go. I probably, if I was a prospect, I think that being a Rays or a Guardians prospect, someone like that, you know, maybe throw the Tigers in there now. Teams like that are probably your best opportunities because you obviously, the Rays have been really good at development over the years. I think that's a team that, you know, the Guardians have been really good at development. So they have kind of those, you're going to get the most out of what you are. But on top of that, there are also teams that kind of churn the roster a lot more. And if you're churning the roster, the opportunities are going to arise. Now, you may need to really grab hold of your opportunity when you're given it, because there's probably someone else to fight with. If you're a Guardians middle infielder, your window of opportunity is pretty small. Ask a Tyler Freeman or guys like that. There's always a guy coming behind you if you don't grab hold of that opportunity. But you are going to get that opportunity probably more quickly than you would in, say, a Dodgers organization, where it may be like, yeah, you're really good, but we've got Mookie Betts playing at your position. And so if he's healthy, you're probably not playing anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Any other trends here before we kind of kick around some other topics revolving around the World Series, like with what we've seen from the better clubs this year that made it the farthest?
I wanted to kind of pose this to Jeff, but I'll kind of start it off, which is when we look at all four of these teams who made the LCS, right? So we got the Dodgers and Yankees, but we've also got the Guardians and the Mets. These are all four systems that I feel like are at least top half systems. I think you agree on this, but like, I think that these are teams that are pretty well positioned to not disappear. We don't expect the Dodgers or Yankees to disappear ever. I feel like the Mets kind of got here a year earlier than expected. And I do think that the Guardians have staying power as well. But if you look at these four, Jeff, kind of which farm system really jumps out to you?
Yeah, I think just from the talent at the top of these four systems, it's probably still the Guardians. Really exciting names. I think, you know, of course you got the number one pick and you're a playoff team, but they do so well out in the international market as well. You know, you look at a player like, you know, Jackson Chourio's younger brother, Jason Chourio, you know, who's going to be in that top four or five within this Guardian system, which puts him squarely within the top 100. There's a lot of talented position players. Of course, you know, Travis Bezzana, you know, Angel Henao. You know, I got to see when I was out in Lake County, I think is a really exciting, you know, switch hitting shortstop with some tools. And then there's always a couple of prospects sort of pop-up types in the lower levels with them. The pitching, you know, they've developed bullpen guys. They've developed starters, injuries this year. And I just feel like that's probably the most exciting system. But at the same time, you look at the Yankees, you look at the Mets, who've certainly gotten better. But I think the Yankees and the Dodgers in particular, they're the type of organizations that they do so well on the international market that, like, you consistently go into the summertime of, you know, the next season, and like there's a guy that pops up in the Dominican Summer League that you'd never heard of before that signed for, you know, $100,000 or less. And the same thing in like the Florida Complex League. They consistently have, or, you know, the Arizona Complex League, obviously for the Dodgers, but they always consistently have these sort of down 30 or even off the 30 type names that, you know, the next year could be top 15 prospects within the system.
So I kind of, the Dodgers also have examples of that. Like I look at an Alex Freeland this year who kind of popped as a guy who was a later round pick. And here we go. He's a top prospect now. They always have, I would say that this is Josh Norris on our staff. Like he goes big game hunting every year, the spring training where he's headed to the Dodgers backfields. And there's always going to be a couple of guys who come up for the DSL who everyone's raving about and going, oh, this player is, you know, watch out for this guy this year. Watch out for him 3-4 years down the road. So they're obviously, they are continual at this. I do think the other thing that we can talk about with all of this is these are organizations who kind of can take a little bit of the all of the above approach as well, which I do think has a lot of advantage with this, which is what I mean by that is they are prominent on scouting. They're prominent on, you know, hiring player development, biomechanists, analytics, all the tools. You know, the Dodgers were kind of on the forefront on the nutrition side where it's like, hey, you know what? Maybe we want to feed our minor leaguers good food, good nutritious food, rather than leftover hot dogs after the game. All these things where these are smart things to do, but they're also the things that you do when you are spending at a different level than everyone else. And that kind of, Scott, leads to something I wanted to ask you, which is last year we heard complaints from fans, from some, who complained about, oh, we have an Arizona-Texas, you know, World Series. Woohoo. Why would anyone care about that? This year, we get the complaint. It's like Dodgers, Yankees. How could we have this again? Which, by the way, when we say again, the Yankees haven't been to the World Series in 15 years, and the Dodgers and Yankees. I was a wee little lad the last time that they faced off in Blue Monday. I remember that. I was actually living in California, Southern California at the time. But I just kind of would ask with all that, Scott. Like, is it this just because baseball fans like to complain, or is this World Series a sign of a problem because we do have two massive, large revenue organizations facing off?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm actually going to take a different turn. I think it's part of a solution because the biggest complaint that I felt like was out there was the postseason format and the bye. And we just eliminated that with one postseason, right? I mean, we just had the top two seeds meeting up. So that's part of the equation here. We just got rid of that complaint. Hey, it's not an advantage if you get a bye out of the first round. Really? Because the Astros proved in the past that they were able to overcome that. At the same time this year, the Astros ran into a Tigers team that was hot and had Tarek Skubal, and the Guardians and the Yankees didn't have to deal with the Tigers in a short series like that. So think about the equation there where Skubal can win you one game on his own, and he kind of did that against Houston. So I think you wipe that out. And I actually think overall, JJ, we're getting rid of a lot of complaints in general because it's a very easy comeback to say, oh, really? When was the last Dodgers-Yankees World Series? And then we talk about how it was little JJ watching in the early 1980s. So I think that we've actually kind of gotten to a point where we have so much variance and parity that we also will have heavyweights sometimes match up. But what are the chances that the Yankees and Dodgers match up again next year, or that we have these consistent dynasties that evolve in our sport? We haven't had back-to-back champs since the Yankees dynasty teams from a quarter century ago. And I think a lot of that has to do with a World Series hangover, and which has to do with pitching in my mind. I just think the chances of having a healthy staff from one year to the next and consistency from that staff alone puts you in a bad spot. So I think it's a good thing, JJ. I think we're actually in a perfect place right now. If we had too many of these wildcard teams consistently making it past the teams that earned it more with wins in the regular season, I felt like that complaint was piling up much larger than the complaints of Yankees Dodgers because it's just an easy comeback right now. Oh, really? When was the last time the Yankees won, right? Like, when was the last time the Dodgers won in a full season? When was the last time we had the top two seeds meeting up? I think it was 2013 was the math so far. So already we're talking about a time over a decade ago. So I actually think we're in a perfect place the way this all lines up. And yes, it doesn't hurt that the league and TV execs and everyone else is excited about this, because the last place I'll go here, and Jeff, I'll kick it to you, is the fact that our sport, baseball, suffers a lot more from a lack of star power at times. And when I say star power, I mean the top five players in our sport, often not necessarily popping up in October when the game's at its largest stage. Shohei Ohtani is a legend. He's a unicorn. We've never seen anything like him in this era of baseball. He had not played a single postseason game. Yeah. And before him, who was the best player in our sport? Mike Trout. He had played in one series. What was it? His rookie or second year, very early on in his career. That crushes us. One hit, right? And what was it? Three games? It was a, or four games, whatever it was.
The Royals series, the Royals wild card
2014. Series. So to me, Jeff, that crushes our sport compared to the NBA. I mean, you never will have a case where you have like the LeBron of the NBA just not playing in the playoffs for a 10-year span. So thank goodness now we have Shohei Ohtani in a better position where the world can watch him. And when I say the world, I mean 13 million plus people watching in Japan, more than the ratings we're putting up in the USA. So I think, I don't want to say we needed this, but if we never have our stars playing at the largest stage, then we're doing a disservice to fans.
Yeah, I think absolutely. That's the biggest thing. You know, as someone who's somewhat impartial in all this, as not really a huge, you know, a fan or, you know, a hater of either team, you know, that was what I took away. It was like, this is awesome. You know, Soto obviously has already been to a World Series. He gets to do that again, as young as he is, and is really tracking with some of the historic superstars of the sport in terms of regular season success, but also playoff success. I think, you know, getting Ohtani into the World Series was like, you know, as a young kid watching basketball and Jordan was coming up, when he finally sort of made that jump and got to an NBA Finals. You know, I think that's kind of what it's on par with, because he's that big of a star. He's transcendent. He's somebody that, you know, people who don't know anything about baseball or just are casually aware of sports, they know who Shohei Ohtani is, and it's a story that they're going to follow. And obviously the things that, you know, he can do in a baseball field that, you know, he's not even pitching right now, and sounds like he's not going to pitch in the World Series. But at the same time, just, you know, the first inning of that first game, we're going to see legitimate star power in Ohtani, Mookie Betts, you know, Aaron Judge, you know, Juan Soto, et cetera. And they're also big brands, big market teams with big fan bases, not only, you know, domestically, but abroad as well. So I think this is in some ways sort of a dream matchup, just from the standpoint of, if this is a good series and these teams play up to their ability, it's one that I think, you know, we're going to harken back to and look back on, you know, for decades. And we haven't really had that sort of a matchup with star power, big markets, some history with the two teams, as I think they've played a dozen times or whatever, but really not in, you know, my lifetime. I think I was born in 1982, so I haven't even really lived through one of these series in the sense that I can remember. And, you know, I'm 40 something years old with kids. So I think it's good for the game. I think it's good just for the promotion of the World Series, the players. And these are the right guys to have there, especially, you know, when you're looking at three of the four best players, you know, from the season this year.
Yeah. You mentioned it, Scott, like the NBA does have an advantage when it comes to this, because LeBron James by himself pretty much guaranteed that whatever team LeBron James chose to be on that year was probably going to be in the NBA Finals. It was from 2007 to 2020. He went 10 times. You know, you had Cleveland versus Golden State, I think, what, 5 years in a row, I think it was at one point. You know, in that Tom Brady's going to play in the Super Bowl most years if Tom Brady's around. If it's not, Peyton Manning's probably there. You have these sports where the stars kind of drive it much more than they do in baseball. That's where I'm going to be really interested to see this. I'm obviously, we need this. If the series goes six or seven games, because ratings grow as it gets further in, if you get to a do or die game seven, that's going to do a lot better than a game four when a team sweeps. But if that happens, I would not be surprised at all. I would expect it, actually, that you're going to see the World Series outdraw the NBA Finals this year, which isn't as crazy as a lot of people may think. Like, I think that there's this perception nowadays that the NBA Finals ratings sit here, and then the World Series are here, and it's kind of much more closely packed than that. Now, the NBA Finals in recent years have been a little bit higher, but if you go back 2020, which was the weird COVID year, admittedly, but 2020 to 2023, 2020, MLB had better ratings for World Series. 21, World Series had better ratings. 22, 23, the NBA's had better ratings. We'll see. The NBA had a good matchup. They had the Celtics winning it all. That's a big brand in the NBA. But I do think Yankees, Dodgers, we saw the last time that the Yankees were in the World Series, which was quite a while ago now, but they drew 5 million more fans, viewers in that year than were the year before or the year after that. Now, I don't expect 5 million more nowadays because TV ratings across the board for everything other than football have gone down a lot because there's Netflix and TikTok and social media and everything else you want to talk about. But I do think that you're going to see a bump because there are a lot of Yankees fans out there, and there are a lot of fans out there who will just tune in to root against the Yankees. The Dodgers have a large fan base. The Dodgers also have a large group of Giants fans and Padres fans and all that will tune in to hold their nose, root for the Yankees, and root against the Dodgers. So there's a lot of interest here. And I do think that this kind of adds all together to make this a really not just a fascinating World Series, but a really important one. Because let's be honest, if the World Series this year does not outdraw the NBA Finals, it is kind of a clear sign that the NBA Finals now are on a different level ratings-wise. Why should you care about that as a fan? Because these things do play a part when TV contracts and all these things that do affect you as a fan. So I do think it'll be very interesting to see that.
Yeah, it's a great call. Right. I mean, there's more business that comes out of coverage of a sport too. So, I mean, we exist, Baseball America, Foul Territory, right, for a reason, because there are enough eyeballs, there's enough of an audience for us to have discussions like this. So, all right, let's get to something that clearly gets overshadowed this time of year. We try our best to not let it get overshadowed, but there's not really a way around this. The Arizona Fall League has to happen after the season so guys can kind of complete their season and get there. Because I've had it, people say, well, why don't they just start it after the World Series? And you can't do that. You can't have like a player basically wait a month and play it. So anyway, let's hit Helium Spot. All right, Jeff, what do we got going on with the Arizona Fall League? And also, let's try and spin it to what we've seen here in the World Series. So we're going to try and focus on catcher development talk and how the new AFL hot sheet is pretty catcher heavy. But it is notable that in this particular LCS, so in our semifinals in baseball, we had very young catchers that were shining. Austin Wells, and by shining, yes, some of them struggled with the bat for a while. Austin Wells, Bo Naylor up until towards the end of this series, Francisco Alvarez up until towards the end of this series. But what, if anything, can we draw from this?
Yeah, and I think JJ had alluded to it earlier, and he was spot on. Just in terms of, you know, the types of players we're seeing come in and really learn to catch or develop as catchers, as professionals, I think the success rate over recent years and, you know, some of the changes in terms of how guys set up one knee down is certainly something that JJ has championed and seems as if it's been accepted really across like every level of the game at this point. It's rare that you go to a game and don't see a guy in a one knee down setup pretty consistently. What it's sort of taught me and the trend that I'm sort of seeing just from a personal standpoint is guys that you thought really didn't have a chance to develop into average or better defensive catchers at the major league level seem to be making that jump. And I think it's a very coachable position, and maybe that's part of, you know, the types of players at a lot of these organizations that have developed guys like Austin Wells, who had some questions. Even Will Smith was somebody that we had talked about, you know, on the morning show. And I had spoken with, you know, a current scout, former player who had played with Smith, and just the development he's made. You know, now it's been some time as a catcher and a guy that maybe had a little bit less experience than others, you know, historically would have in pro ball. I think we're seeing some big steps forward. And there's a lot of catchers that are interesting, particularly off from the offensive side of things that have been in the AFL. The hot sheet this week had four of them, led by Josue Briseño, who was in the first week's hot sheet as well. He's kind of a catcher with a lowercase c. I think he probably ends up at first base. Honestly, he's a really big body. I think, you know, Theron Lorenzo, who made week one's hot sheet, but not week two's, I think he's probably more likely to stick at catcher, and it's still kind of a question mark there. But overall, I think there's just a lot of talent at the position offensively, and we're seeing a lot of these guys take pretty substantial jumps just in terms of their defensive ability, blocking, receiving, and just sort of handling the game and all that it calls for at that position in the modern game. You know, I don't know what JJ's thoughts are on that.
So I want to put you on the spot again, because when you say that, the one who's also on this week's AFL hot sheet, who you've talked to me about a lot, is Moises Ballesteros. And to me, he's the example of how nowadays it's kind of a effort and development question more so often than maybe 20 years ago. It was just a, no, there's no chance of this. I think of an Alejandro Kirk, who has ended up having a very solid career so far, but, you know, bad body catcher, but is better at all of the things than maybe it was thought kind of coming up, because again, he's really worked at it and he's better at a lot of these things that maybe you would expect when you see a guy with that kind of that frame. Moises Ballesteros is a massive human, but I'd say that we're more open to the idea that he could stay behind the plate than we would, you know, the Cubs prospect, than we would have been say 20 years ago, 15 years ago, because he shows the willingness to put in the work. But on top of that, you can kind of drill some of these things that, in a way that maybe we weren't able to see being done a decade or two ago.
Yeah, and he's so valuable with the bat. And I think, you know, it kind of gets lost in the numbers, particularly what he did at AAA, how young he was, you know, for the AAA level, handling the catching position, you know, having to hit against players who were 4, 5, sometimes 6, 7 years in, you know, older. A lot of, you know, retread sort of major leaguers are in those leagues as well. And, you know, I think if he even gets to like a fringe average sort of ability behind the plate, he's probably a guy that's going to, you know, see at least 50% of his time, you know, as a catcher and just having some of that versatility.
That made me think of one other thing, which is when we talk about defense and catcher defense, when we talk about fringe average, I would say that the other thing that has changed now is kind of what's valued there. Now, this could obviously change back. I don't think that robo-umps are coming in anytime soon to the big leagues on a pervasive level. But if you can frame well, especially if you can frame well and block well, I know that the running game is more a part of the game now. There are more stolen bases. But that being said, like Austin Wells is a good framer and a good blocker. He's not particularly good at throwing out base runners. That doesn't matter as much right now. And so when we talk about fringe average or average, it's like, okay, well, what are the aspects that are fringe average and what are not? And if it's framing nowadays, a lot of times that is something that I would say in the last 10 to 15 years, two things that have been discovered more than anything, kind of most important discoveries are, one is velocity can be trained as much as it is that you are gifted with it or not, which when I started at BA, I think there was much more the belief that you either had an incredible arm or you didn't. Now there's much more kind of a regimen to training velocity for pitchers. But then the second part of that is that when framing started to become a thing in the big league level, it was kind of something where these are the good framing catchers and these are the catchers who are really bad at kind of taking that borderline pitch and making it a strike. These guys do it really well. These guys do it really poorly. Nowadays, what you would say is these guys are the ones who do it really well. And these are the guys who haven't been taught how to do it really well yet. And very few guys can't be really improved at that. Salvador Perez, even old dogs can lose new tricks, you know, can learn new tricks. Salvador Perez was really bad at framing, and now he's gotten a lot better at it just by working at it, because there are a lot of drills and a lot of tips you can do that will turn that borderline pitch that used to be called a ball for a catcher into a strike.
Oh, yeah, it's good ball talk right there. And also for Dodger fans, I mean, yes, Will Smith is not as young as the others that we were just talking about, but you know, obviously, like we mentioned, Dalton Rushing, pretty damn good prospect, puts yourself in a pretty good position for either depth or, you know, like we mentioned at the top of the show, you got assets, you develop them, you trade them if you don't have a spot for them, you know?
This is the perfect example. Like, I don't know if Dalton Rushing is going to fit for them. Maybe he does in left field as a backup catcher, but Will Smith signed for a long time, and especially a healthy Will Smith. I'm not sure that this is a healthy Will Smith this year, but a healthy Will Smith is one of the best catchers in the National League. I understand where Rushing may not be a push him aside, but he's at least a really great shade chip, or he's an outfielder who can play there too.
Yeah. And he's, I mean, Will Smith signed up for a long time, and Dalton Rushing is a top 30 prospect on Baseball America's current top 100 list right now. If you want more access to everything on the Baseball America website and the newsletter, the whole deal, make sure you get yourself a subscription to BA. Subscribe to this channel. Hope you like the new time. Join us next time live if you're catching us after the fact on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. And happy World Series. We'll see everyone a few games into the World Series next week on Hot Sheet.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.